You may be seated. We're going to continue straight on, and in doing so, we realize that these two parables are back-to-back, which may make us much less comfortable with the second than we used to be. For it is as if a man, going on a journey, summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of these slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, "Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I do not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Are you uncomfortable saying that yet? We are still in that last week of Jesus' life. So to give you a sense for where these parables happen, the next chapter, Matthew 26, is the conspiracy to arrest Jesus. So that's where we are. And I don't know if you can tell, but Jesus seems to be getting his foot on the throttle a little bit more with these parables. Okay, people, step it up. Exam time's coming, is the feeling I kind of get from them. These two are coming right after a period of talking about the temple being torn down and the day of the Lord coming like a thief in the night, and nobody knows when it's coming. Now, if you ever really want to know way too much information about this, virtually every public access channel at 2 a.m. will have somebody with a long thing of graphs and charts who will tell you exactly how to figure out when this is coming. You can also look for the crazy guy with the sandwich board that says the end is near, walking on the square in Marion. These parables are tough. They're tough partly because they make us uncomfortable, and partly because they don't seem to match the Jesus we know. I think that's actually a piece of the power of the parables. Both of them are talking about preparation. Are you prepared? Are you ready? So in the first one, one of my colleagues in ministry posted, "You knew it was going to be a disaster when they said there were 10 bridesmaids." You've got 10 bridesmaids, and the custom in those days was the groom, would go to the bride's house and take her from there to their new residence. So that's what's happening. It's the final departure of the bride from her parents' household. And there are 10 bridesmaids. And surprising to none of you who've ever been to a wedding, imagine this: part of the wedding party shows up late. I know that's surprising, isn't it? And you have 10 bridesmaids, and they're supposed to have lamps. Like, their one job is to have lamps. And five of them it sets up are wise, and five of them it sets up are foolish. The five wise ones have extra lamp oil. Well, the groom is late. Very late. Late enough that all 10, the wise and the foolish, fall asleep. But then there's a shout, "Hey, he's here!" And they try to trim their lamps and get them burning, and five of them don't have enough oil. So they do what we would do, probably, say, "Can I have some of yours?" Right? You might have enough, right? Well, 5-10 probably doesn't work. The modern day equivalent of this is that they go to sleep and only five of them brought the chargers for their smartphones. And they need to plug in as well. There's all sorts of problems with this. Like, we think that God should be doing parables about how they share, and there's enough, right? I mean, that's the Hanukkah story from 70 BC. We think that that's how this should work. That's not how this works. The five wise ones say, "Go to the store." Now, I really wonder how many 24-hour lamp oil stores there were in first century Israel. But apparently they go and they find lamp oil, but by the time they get back, the party is over. The groom has gone in, those with lamps have gone in, and the doors are closed, and the groom says, "I don't even know you." No, I have never been a bridesmaid. So I know two things about bridesmaids. They're supposed to wear hideous dresses, and they're supposed to never be able to wear the dress again, and it's supposed to cost an arm and a leg. I have been the best man on a couple occasions. So I know that my best man's job is threefold. You have to make sure the groom is there and sober enough to be married. Job number one. Job number two is that you are entrusted with the rings. And job number three is that you have to give the first toast at the reception. So you only have three jobs. What kind of best man are you if you lose the rings? I mean, honestly, you know, you had one job. Bring the rings. Bring the groom. Bring the rings. We can probably forget the toast. But bring the groom and bring the rings. And I imagine that that's the equivalent conversation that would be happening with these bridesmaids. Literally, you had one job, lamp and oil. And yet, half of you knew this was your job, and half of you didn't have a clue. Paired with the next parable, the parable of the talents, which you've heard preached on how many times? Like, do you have enough fingers? Do we need to take off shoes and start counting on toes? And these two come back to back, which was something I hadn't really realized and thought about until I started prepping for this sermon series. The parable of the talents is uncomfortable too, because that last servant, he's just read the riot act. And this whole thing at the end about those who have, they'll get more, and those who don't have, they'll get less, that just doesn't seem like Jesus, right? I mean, Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, did you forget your only sermon when you were doing this parable? But you've got these three servants, and they have worked for their master for a long time. And he leaves, and he knows them well enough to entrust them with things. I mean, think about that. Who do you leave your house key with when you go out of town? Is it somebody you barely know? I know, Gayla, that involves locking the house to begin with. I'm not quite there. I'm not that much a Marian person yet. I still lock the doors when I leave the house. Who are you going to trust your business, your livelihood to when you leave? Is it going to be the guy you hired last week? He needs to sign up for training, but, you know, he's on the payroll books, and maybe you still need a W-4 from him, but okay, let's go. That's not the guy I'm going to trust. And so you've got these three servants, and they're given talents according to their gifts, 5 and 2 and 1. And then the master just leaves. No itinerary, no return date, no sense of, I'm coming back on Tuesday, just don't burn the place down. And the first one goes and invests, immediately was our word in Sunday school this morning, and doubles the money. And the second one immediately goes and invests, and he doubles his money too. And I'm thinking, where are these people who can double their money this quickly? And the last one is afraid. The last one is afraid, and so he buries that one talent. He hides it under the mattress, puts it in the cookie jar, whatever the metaphor is you need to grasp. And then eventually the master comes back. It says, after a long time, so given that the Bible rarely does long times in things other than years, right? I mean, when we get to the Noah story, it rained for a long time. Yes, well, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, which compared to our rainstorms is a really long time. When it comes to the wilderness, they were in the wilderness a long time, 40 years. So the master leaves, and then he comes back after a long while. And the first one he's very happy with, and the second one he's very happy with. And the third one is where you get this sense of the expectations. The third slave says, I knew you were harsh, and I knew you reaped where you did not sow, and you gathered where you did not cast seed. And so I was absolutely terrified of you. And so I just buried it, made sure I could find it, and give it back to you. And that's where this other piece jumps in, because then the master says, well, if you knew I was like this, you could have at least gotten a CD with 0.03% interest. This is not the 80s anymore, people. There's no interest rates with whole percentages out there. And I would have gotten my own back plus interest. What struck me in reading these two parables this week is how much of the outcome of the parable depends on knowing what's expected. The bridesmaids, I mean, at least half of them know what their job, well, all of them sort of know what their job is. They all show up with lamps. It's not there are 10 bridesmaids, and there are 5 with lamps and oil, and 3 with lamps, and 2 who are completely clueless who show up without anything. They all know what their job is, but some of them are prepared better than others for the expectation. We get into the parable of the talents. We have servants that we assume have been with the master for a long time, because even the one who, in the telling of the parable, makes the biggest mistake knows the character of the master. And I think that those passages being put at the end of Jesus' earthly ministry are really directed at the disciples. You have been hanging out with me for 3 years, and you ought to know what I expect from you by now. And then I sit here and think, well, that means I'm in trouble. I've been hanging out with the Lord for almost 43 years, and I'm not sure I always know what's expected. Right? Are we prepared for something like Easter? Are we prepared to be disciples? I don't know that we always are. Partly because I think we get really conflicting messages in our society about who God is. I grew up in part of the world where God was really happy to just damn me for all eternity. I mean, like, that seemed like the thing that gave God more joy than anything else. And so, like, maybe I should just be a lousy sinner because that way God gets his way. But then I went to church and I started hearing this other thing that was that God loves me. And I'm sitting here, well, that doesn't make any sense with what those billboards say. And I started to struggle, honestly struggle with the sense of I want to make God happy with me, not because I'm afraid of what will happen if I don't, but because I believe God wants to be happy with me. And to me, that's two entirely different things. I grew up not doing certain things because I know they would get me in trouble. I'm sure some of you have that list of things that you knew not to do because it would get you in trouble. And for a while, I did them just because I really didn't need to get in trouble. And then I realized a lot of the things I wasn't supposed to be doing had some really nasty consequences attached to them. One of the things my parents harped on, my dad particularly, was that a man's word was his bond. And it sounds trite and old-fashioned and all that stuff, but we talked about it a little bit in Sunday school. What do you have if you have a reputation as somebody who lies? And how do you rehabilitate that? So I learned slowly, because I'm a slow learner, that sometimes there was a better reason to not do these things than, oh no, I'm going to get in trouble with mom and dad. And at some point in my middle teenage years, I made that application to this God character too. That there was a better reason to not do these things than, oh no, God was going to get mad at me. And that was a challenge. Because all around me, there were plenty of reasons to believe that the only reason you don't do bad things is because you're afraid of hell. So I was a teenager and a college student and a seminary student during that time period where churches like to do those hell things for October for Halloween to scare people straight. And I had a bunch of Baptist friends who thought that that was a fun thing to do for Halloween. Like, to me, that's not a fun thing to do any day of the year. And I thought, somehow, in my weird teenage sense of what Calvinism and Reformed theology was, that God already loved me without needing to go through a house of horrors. I think these parables come down to us being asked, what does God expect from us, and are we ready to do what God expects? So if we take these parables a little bit less literally than they absolutely are, one of them, the first one, simply asks, are you in it for the long haul? I mean, I have lived long enough that I have outlived several times when the world was supposed to end. Somebody had deciphered the Bible and come up with the days. And I remember vividly sitting in middle school math class, and we had a test scheduled for the day after the world was going to end. And so we were smart-mouthed teenagers. I know that surprises all of you terribly. And several of us said, well, if the world ends, do we still have to take the test? And the teacher said, you might want to prepare as though the world was not coming to an end on a specific date. I think that's a bit of the message of the parable of the bridesmaids, is you might want to prepare as though everything isn't going to happen according to plan. You might want to prepare as though it's going to take longer. It always takes longer. And then there's this weird nuance in the parable of the talents that the master trusted the slaves more than the third slave trusted himself. This really odd piece going on there. That I'm sure if he's this rich, because we've talked about how much talents are before, and talents are like a year's salary. So if I'm going to hand John a year's salary, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get something back from him, right? And if I'm going to hand Jay 5 years' salary, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get something back from her. And I might not hand Vivian 2 years' salary just because I don't know if she's going to be here in 2 years. But she's outlasted the rest of us so far. The master puts an immense amount of trust in the servants or the slaves, depending on how we translate that. And two of them respond to that trust, and one of them runs and hides, essentially. I think a lot of times we are the disciple who runs and hides. And this mirrors our Sunday school conversation so perfectly this morning. What does it mean to immediately go and follow Jesus was our question in Sunday school. What does it mean that God hands you something to make a difference? What do you do with it? I think there's this huge piece to the timing of these two parables coming right before Judas is going to sell Jesus out and right before Jesus is going to die. I think Jesus is trying to get through the thick-skulled disciples, then and now, and saying, guys, you know me. You know what's expected. Be ready. You know what I'm trusting you with. Think about what Jesus has entrusted the church with since his death. We are entrusted with the gospel. Are we really that trustworthy? I mean, honestly, think about it for a moment. We are entrusted with the good news of salvation in Jesus Christ to go out to the whole world. And sometimes we just go, oh. Let me just hide it right here so I can find it later. How much more do you want to get entrusted with? Ultimately, I think a huge piece of where the disciples go from here, because they have a radical turnaround post-Easter in Pentecost. And where we go from here, it is called to be the same place. Out. But at some point, Peter goes from the denier to the proclaimer. And at some point, we have to decide we're in it for the long haul and be that person who goes to Sam's Club to buy the lamp oil when we're named bridesmaid. At some point, we have to lose the fear of disappointing God and understand that God has handed us a great gift to be used. Little secret. I am terrified of public speaking. I am not good at public speaking. Preaching isn't public speaking. I am absolutely terrified of public speaking. I do this every week. How does that work? Clearly, God has given me something. But it doesn't extend everywhere. So how do we figure out where we use our gifts if we're so afraid to use them? These parables are, in my mind, the cram session before the final exam. We don't have much time, and we need to get it, and so you need to be prepared that these things are going to be on the exam, and you need to learn them. Be in it for the long haul. Be prepared for the long haul. Be willing to risk. Both of those things are only possible if we have a sense of what it is we're called to do and be in the world and who's calling us. These parables don't make any sense at the beginning of Jesus' ministry because they don't know who he is. He's just the crazy guy who comes up and says, I will make you fish for people. But they've seen the healings, they've heard the teachings, they've seen the evil spirits respond. They've seen crowds fed that should not be able to be fed. They have come around in their own minds to saying that this is not just the son of Mary and Joseph. They're still going to need another push. When we hear these parables, we've had longer than 3 years with Jesus. Do we understand who it is who's telling us these stories? Who's gifting us with talents, who's entrusting us with the gospel, and who is asking us to be a part of the wedding party. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.